Hey everybody, it's Adam, live and in person for you. Hey everybody, it's Adam, wonder who he'll interview.
Hey everyone, it's Call Me Adam, and on this episode of Burying It All with Call Me Adam on the Broadway Podcast Network, I am recording at the Houdini Museum in New York City. Today, I am speaking with writer, actress, and singer Leona Michelle. Hi, Leona.
Hi,
it's
Adam.
So great to have you on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. Very excited to be here.
I'm excited to talk to you because it's been 5 years since our last interview.
Oh my God, my eyes are popping out of my head when you said that.
Because the last interview we did was when you were in Amazing Grace on Broadway.
That is true. That is true. That is true. Wow. 5 years?
Yes. Yes, we've seen each other in between, but we have not done an interview.
That's right, because we do our small circle. We have ran into each other. Yes. Wow, but just to think about Amazing Grace 5 years ago.
Yes.
Wow. For me, it feels like maybe a couple of years.
Yeah.
You know, like it's just yesterday in a sense. Like that show meant so much to me. That was my Broadway debut, you remember?
Yes, I do.
Playing Ayotunde from Sierra Leone. In Amazing Grace, and that was the show that really inspired me to become a writer. You know,
Wow. Yeah,
it really did.
That's incredible.
It really did. Watching the writer there, the writing team there, Christopher Smith, first time writer, and his show making it all the way to Broadway. I was just in awe of that. You know, watching his process and at times being invited to at the writer's table to even, you know, make some suggestions of my own.
Oh, wow.
Which was very exciting. It was such a generous team.
That's wonderful.
So, yeah, it really put the fire up under my butt to say, hey, you know, I've always wanted to write and now I'm writing.
I was just about to say, you're working on your second show already that you're writing.
Yes.
So we have so much to talk about, and we're going to start with one of the shows you just wrote called Little Girl Blue, which was the Nina Simone musical, which made made an incredible debut last year at the George Street Playhouse, and now you are making a triumphant return for a one night only concert to celebrate Black History Month and Women's History Month. So We are going to talk about the show, but before we do that, let's just briefly talk about the concert.
Okay.
So what can you tell us about the concert? You know, how will it differ from the show itself?
Oh, yeah. It is not the show Little Girl Blue, the Nina Simone musical. But what it is really me just a year. It's like the year anniversary of us doing the show at the George Street. And the folks there were just so kind. In the audience that drove from near and far, they were just so generous, you know, giving me so much. And to be quite honest with you, I just miss Nina. And I just want to get back to work. I want to get back to singing her groovy music. And so this platform is really an opportunity for me and the audience to have some fun, shake it up, sing some songs that weren't in the show. You know, and some of my favorites, you know, really celebrating her life. Initially, I wanted to do it on her birthday in February, but we moved to March, which is Women's Month. You know, how appropriate.
Exactly.
You know, how appropriate. So it really worked out. And I'm so grateful to the George Street Playhouse for taking this on for one night only.
That's incredible. Well, I know everybody listening is going to have to go see it because, like you said, it is one night only.
Yeah.
And if you didn't get to see the show last year, you have to see this concert. You have to see Leona live in person because you are incredible.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And one thing about how you were talking about in Amazing Grace, how you were invited to the writer's table. And it's like, not only were you making your Broadway debut, but it's like you also got your first taste of what it's like to be in that writer's table.
Yeah.
I mean, it was such a momentous experience.
Now, when I say invited to the writer's table, it's more like you slide a note and you say, hey, just a thought. I was wondering. Because the thing is, when you're writing shows, there's a huge responsibility when you're writing about real life.
Yes.
You know, someone who actually walked this earth.
Yes.
And I'm grateful to those individuals who realize that, you know, I don't have all the answers in the room. And we got people of color that ancestors came from Africa that can perhaps help us mm-hmm. in telling this story. So once again, they were so generous in allowing me to bring my own experience, my own culture and knowledge to the table.
Yes.
And the John Newton story.
That's so wonderful.
Thank you.
And to now be able to like take that experience. Mm-hmm. And like you said, you were like, it lit a fire under you. And
it
now
did.
You wrote this musical, The Little Girl Blue, and you're working on, which we're going to get to a little later in the interview, but you also are working on a musical about Nelson Mandela.
Yes.
So, I mean, it's incredible that here you want it. It's something you got a taste of in Amazing Grace. And now, 5 years later, you've written two shows.
Yes.
Pretty much. Because Mandela, you're still writing?
Yes, absolutely. Yes. Absolutely. The Nina Simone musical, once Amazing Grace ended, I went off on tour, done a bunch of regional theaters. And then there was like a lull in my career where it's just like, you know, what am I doing? What am I doing? What am I doing? Mm. And I felt like I just wanted to kick a can down the street every 5 minutes, you know, going in and out of auditions and belting mm-hmm. and singing and getting material. I'm like, oh, this is not that great. And telling my manager and complaining like, hey, this material is not great. And he was like, you know what? You complain a lot. Mm. What is it that you want? I said, I want good stuff to do. I want to be able to do the Lady Macbeth, the Medeas, the classics. I want to be able to do the leading ladies. And I want to be able to do things that are challenging and important. And he said, well, it sounds like you might want to start writing.
Mm.
And I said, well, you know, okay. Well, who is my Lady Macbeth? Who is my Medea? Mm-hmm. Who is my leading lady? And I looked around my apartment and posters that are staring right into my eyeballs was Nina Simone. And I said, this is it. This is it. This is my time. She and I, we get each other.
Yes.
You know, we're cut from the same cloth. You know, she's a groovy woman mm-hmm. who walked this earth, a trailblazer, never was comfortable in her own shoes. So she dug a little deeper. She was always digging deep.
Yes.
You know, yes. And searching and fighting. And unapologetic.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that about Nina Simone. I really, really do love that about her. And it's just been a privilege to like nest in my office and like create this story and then be the vessel to tell it mm-hmm. in her spirit with integrity.
I mean, here it's sort of like, it's a sort of a very similar situation. And then here you were like fighting, audition.
Yes.
And then you stopped the fight by writing the show as an opportunity for yourself. So you wanted a leading lady. You got it because you created it yourself.
You
made your own opportunity, which is
That's
fantastic.
Right. Yeah, I mean,
and you're going to be a trailblazer and inspiration for so many other actresses and women out there who feel the same way as you, going audition. It's like, well, what can I do? And then they can say, well, look what Leona did.
Yeah.
She created this show, which was a smashing success at the George Street Playhouse. It was like standing room only.
Yes.
Practically every single night.
Yeah.
And
my God.
You know.
My God.
And now the show is making traction to come to New York City.
Yeah.
It's projected to come 2021.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about the show a little bit.
Okay.
Some of this we already talked about. You sort of gave me why you initially wrote the show. What did you learn about Nina Simone from writing the show that you didn't know prior?
Wow. There was always so much, you know, just from like digging into the research. And at one point, this show was 3-4 hours long.
Wow.
You know, when I read it for my collaborators, they were like, whoa, this is a lot of material. I'm like, she lived a lot of life. Okay. We got to tell it all. So I think the main thing I learned was that Nina worked so hard. And I found the show to be extremely exhausting.
Mm-hmm.
Exhausting. By the time the curtain came down, I was just wiped. And it was just like, how do I get through a complete week of this show? And it's not that Nina's music was terribly difficult, mm-hmm. but there was so much heart in it, so much spirit attached to it that in telling her story honestly, there was no way in the musical theater world for me to kind of finesse it in a way to make it comfortable for the artist to do it.
Yeah.
So the work itself commanded me to just step into this emotional roller coaster and then sing these gritty songs and expose her vulnerability and shift on a dime and take it to another level. So I found it to be very, very exhausting. And at the end of the night, I will always say to myself, thank you, Nina, for this ride. I'm supposed to be tired, because she was.
Mm.
And she created her best work through her exhaustion.
Yes.
And I think the show only got better and better. I started to welcome the exhaustion. Mm-hmm. Like, well, here we go. Here's this moment. Here is this challenge. I could feel this weight and this exhaustion piled up on top of me, but this is really how Nina lived.
Right.
This is how she walked through this life. So I respect that and I embrace it.
That's wonderful. And it probably helped you sort of stay within character every night too, to welcome in and to be like, well, if this is how she was, this is how I have to be.
Let me tell you, there's something very liberating when you can just step on stage and leave all your skill that you learned from graduate school in the back closet and be like, I'm going on this journey.
Yeah.
The voice may crack, the body may hurt, my feet may ache, my back may ache, people might be not clapping, and I could use that energy too. It's like, this is an experience for the artist and the audience.
Yes.
You know, Nina's in charge.
That's right. She came out every night on stage.
Every night.
Oh my God, I love it. Yeah. I love it. Now, I do find it interesting that you mentioned initially when you wrote the show, it was 4 hours, 3 to 4 hours.
Yeah.
So how did you decide what to cut out? Because you were like, I want to tell her whole story. So how do you chop it down?
Yeah, I had a great team around me. Devin Ann Janke, my director, and Mark Pfeiffer, who did all the arrangements and the music. The three of us, we really just nested together for like a good year of fine tuning and shaping the show, which was difficult because there was so many parts and pieces to the piece. And then we just narrowed it down to, well, what is the story? You know, when you talk about a woman's life and the evolution of this woman, we cut it in the span of two decades. It starts in, act one is in 68 and act two ends and she's out of the country in 78. So she's really evolved quite a bit in the span of 10 years.
Yeah.
So it's really exciting. And she's facing her demons, you know, her abuse from her husband, racism in America, being a woman in America, dealing with her mental illness of being a bipolar and not being diagnosed properly. There was so much heavy lifting that she had to do. And then her biggest heartbreak of all, the fact that she really, really wanted to do was to be the first Black classical pianist and to be denied that and to be just thrown into a world of jazz, because that's what classical Black artists had to do, play jazz. So it's a story that goes deep into her heartbreaks.
Yeah.
And how she overcomes them all. She was a survivor.
Yes. Well, it's those kinds of stories that really make for great, great theater.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Now that we have a little retrospective of the show, let us talk about the show's future life.
Okay.
So, with the projected timeline of 2021 of the show coming to New York, what do you feel you learned from last year's run that will inform this future production?
Before we get to that answer, let's take a quick break and get a word in from one of our sponsors. We'll be back in a minute. Oh, wait. You don't know? You haven't heard? You must not be subscribed to the Call Me Adam Digest. When you sign up for the Call Me Adam Digest, you are the first to know. You get a front row seat to my interviews and podcast episodes, where you get to discover new things about your favorite celebrities. You get personal stories from the other side of the microphone that you wouldn't know by just reading, watching, or listening to my interviews. We get to have a weekly connection, and you can add some fun to your weekend. So come take a peek behind the curtain with the Call Me Adam Digest. Sign up today at callmeadam.com. Can't wait to see you there. Welcome back to Bearing It All with Call Me Adam. So as you were saying...
Oh, great question. I found that, you know, the show started as a one-woman show.
Mm-hmm.
And by the time we made it to George Street, I had developed the band, which is a three-piece band, mm-hmm. Developed the characters. And in doing so, I found that to be very, very satisfying. Mm-hmm. All the workshops we did prior, I found it extremely lonely on stage.
Mm.
You know, to have the band there, not be able to interact with them, yes. and all this storytelling to cover, I found it very, very lonely. Very lonely.
Mm.
And then I think one workshop, we just started like playing a little bit and shaking it up. And boy, oh boy, it was just so... Like, I could breathe. Like, mm-hmm. I could breathe in a different kind of way. And we could throw the ball. And I've always loved that about acting, that the tossing back and forth of the ball with acting and keeping that in the air. And mm-hmm. it also helped us to produce a lot of levity for the show that it needed.
Mm.
So what I learned from the George Street run is that I want to go even further with developing the band.
Mm.
Even more. Like, I feel like the show would really... Be even more satisfying to really give some skin and some bone to those band members, because they really were her support.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, they really were her support.
That's terrific.
Thank you.
And what excites you to bring the show back?
Oh my goodness. I miss it so much. Mm. I don't know. This, like I keep saying that Little Girl Blue is my Shakespeare,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I really just loved every bit of creating it.
Mm-hmm.
I loved being in the design meetings and seeing all the parts and pieces coming together. I loved being in the tech. There wasn't a part of this development that I did not like. This was the first time mm-hmm. in my career from beginning to end that I felt full, like 100% mm-hmm. an artist.
Wow.
To create something, to perform it, and to then come out on the other end of it and be able to shake hands with the audience, like seeing it through,
mm-hmm.
you know, from the quiet office space of, you know, rewriting lines mm-hmm. and the playback of it all.
Mm.
It was just tremendous. So that's what I really, really miss most about it, is just the work, doing the work,
mm-hmm.
you know, waking up to the work and going to sleep with the work mm. and wrestling in my dreams about the work, how to improve the work, the constant work.
Mm.
It was a beautiful exhaustion. And, so satisfying, and I have never felt like that in my life as an yeah. artist. Like, I feel like I'm a full artist.
That's incredible.
Thank you.
So wonderful. And to be able to have a body of work that yeah. you can have that statement with.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's yes.
wonderful. And such a yes. such an achievement that not everybody gets to say.
Yeah.
So congratulations.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
You're welcome. You're welcome. And with the 2021 projection of the show coming to New York, do you have like a time frame within that year, like fall, winter, spring?
Yeah, we're eyeballing the spring.
Mm-hmm.
I have a wonderful lead producer coming on board with this project, mm. and we're all working so closely together to find the right house for the show mm. and for an off-Broadway run. Of course, I wanted to run
yes.
run forever.
Yes.
But truth be told, Nina belongs on Broadway.
Yes.
So, you know, we can't even stay off Broadway for too long. And I'm just hoping that coming into the city, having an off Broadway run will get the right attention that that Nina deserves.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
And especially with all these iconic musicals, bio musicals that mm-hmm. are like so popular now. It just seems like the right timing for a show like Little Girl Blue.
Yes.
With all the amazing reviews the show has around it. There has been a difficulty in describing what this is, because it really mm. is an experience. There's nothing like it,
mm-hmm.
you know? So when people come see this show, when it hits off Broadway, I think it's going to be a big surprise.
Yes. Well, knowing what I know about your performing, I mean, I unfortunately did not make it to George Street Playhouse to see the initial run, but
yeah.
knowing about your, how much of yourself and how you really give it 1,000% in every performance. Yeah. I mean, I can only imagine the luck and the joy and the journey that people got to see you in that show every night. I mean, yeah. So lucky for everyone who got to see it.
Oh my gosh,
and
thank
I can't
you.
Wait for it to come to New York so more people can see it, including yeah. me.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank
You're
you
welcome.
Very much.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you're such a dynamic performer that, I mean, anything you do, you're so good. You're so good. I'm not just saying that. I mean, yeah. I truly believe that.
Thank you.
I mean, even when, I think it was last year or maybe it was like 2018, you guest starred on an episode of Law & Order SVU.
I did. Yes.
And I was watching it and I was like, oh my God, it's Leona. And you were so good.
Thank you.
And I was like, oh my God, look at her go. So I'm just right. thrilled that New York audiences are going to get to experience you again, because it's been a while since you've yeah. also been on the New York stage. So yep. it'll be great to have you back.
Yeah, thank
yeah,
you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Yeah. So now we are going to, before we talk about Mandela, we're going to switch gears and play a game.
Okay.
So
okay.
the game is based upon the show's title, Little Girl Blue.
Okay.
And I want to find out some things about you from your childhood.
Okay.
So, what were some of your favorite games to play as a child?
Favorite games to play? I'm going to have to say, Double Dutch.
Oh, what's that?
Double Dutch is when, okay. So, have you ever seen little black girls with two ropes?
Uh-huh.
They go back and forth, yes. back and forth, and then one of them are on the outside of it, and they have to jump in to the two ropes
yes.
that are twirling
yes.
and move their feet real fast,
yes.
like they're tap dancing,
mm-hmm.
and without making the ropes stop.
Yes.
I was really good at that.
Oh, my gosh.
Now, I don't know how I got inside of between those two ropes without getting smacked in the face.
Yeah.
Because it is kind of dangerous. Mm-hmm. The two ropes are going really, really fast, and you just jump in.
Yes.
So it's like you're eyeballing it, and you're going back and forth, back and forth. You're like, here I go. I'm in. And jump. And jump. It was so much fun.
Oh, my gosh.
And let me tell you, the girls in the neighborhood, the little girls, I'm talking about 7, 8-year-olds, 9, 10, 11, 12-year-olds. They were masters at this.
Yeah.
Master jump ropers.
Yeah.
It's a skill.
I actually, now that you mentioned, I do remember seeing girls play it in school when I was in school.
Oh, it's a skill.
I was always like so amazed that,
yeah.
that they could do it. And I really never saw anybody get hit with it. They were always in and like perfect.
Yeah. yeah. Now, some people, they will try to come and try to do it
mm-hmm.
and think, oh, they could do it. No. It's a skill.
Yes.
You gotta
yes.
eyeball those ropes.
Mm-hmm.
You gotta have timing and rhythm.
Mm-hmm. It would definitely be a skill that I do not have.
Okay.
I have no rhythm, so I would be. I mean, I would get smacked in the face.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. I would be.
I don't know if I still got it though, but back in the day, I had it.
I mean, you did write a whole show and star in it, so I think you still have
okay.
it. Yeah. 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 And you know what? Maybe one day we'll test it out.
Maybe.
We'll see.
Hey, maybe I'll be my warm up for
yes,
the show.
Exactly.
A little double dutch.
Exactly. That could be a future. That'll be your future response when someone says, what's your pre-show ritual? Double dutch.
Double dutch, baby. Yeah. Backstage. Double dutch it. It's a great focus game.
That's right.
I'm physically warm.
I love it. What's some music you listened to growing up?
Growing up. Well, in my household, well, rather my mother's household, in very, very Christian household, we listened to a lot of gospel music.
Mm.
Gospel music. I grew up in a church, like Nina.
Mm-hmm.
I was in church like 5 days a week.
Wow.
Bible study, Sunday school, Tuesday night prayer, youth service, all types of programs. There were choir rehearsal on Saturday. So like 5 days
wow.
a week, I was in church. So my vocabulary was all up and through gospel music. When it came to singing, mm. it was gospel music, which is something I don't do a lot of today.
Yeah.
But you know, once it's in you.
Yes. Yes.
The gospel's there, just in you.
Yeah.
So yeah, but I also, my mother did let me collect Broadway music.
Mm.
So she would buy me albums, and that was always a treat. And I remember I had one album, Funny Girl, Barbara Streisand,
mm.
and I played that album. It has the scratches on that album. whew, it did not stop me from singing along. Aww. It did not stop me from singing. It was one of my favorite albums was Barbara Streisand. That's Funny wonderful. Girls.
Maybe you can write an updated version of Funny Girl.
Do, 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 do.
Starring Leona Michelle.
Yes, maybe.
Yes. Yes. What are some TV shows you watched?
Growing up?
Yeah.
Oh, The Cosbys.
Yes.
I felt like I was Vanessa. I really did. Everything that we grew up, Vanessa and I, we grew up together. I felt like we would have been besties.
Yeah.
And especially when she like busted out with her natural afro in one episode. Mm-hmm. I was like, primetime television rocking the fro was Vanessa.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Have you met Temptis Bledsoe?
I've never met Temptis Bledsoe. I would love to.
Well, if she's listening, Temptis, come meet Leona.
Yes. She was my sister.
Oh.
And Theo was my boyfriend.
Oh, wow.
How does that work?
Oh, wow.
Yes. Oh, I loved it.
I think now.
It's like my first boy crush.
Yes. Yes. I think Jamal's with someone now.
Is he taken?
I think so. So that might not work now. Oh, but growing man. Up, yes. Growing up, I don't know that there would have been much competition because he probably would have chosen you over the others.
Yeah,
but a lot of people
now.
Had. Do. Yeah. A lot of people had a crush on him.
Right?
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
You just loved him. He was mm-hmm. just like just this regular guy. Just a good brother. You know, he was hot and he had hot
yes.
friends.
Yes. Alfonso.
Remember Alfonso?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Had his big break.
Yes. Yes.
On The Cosbys. Wow.
No. So many great wow. people on that show.
Definitely.
I think at one point I wanted Felicia Rashad to be my mother.
Oh my
yeah.
gosh.
She was
you
so
know,
fun.
I've never met Felicia Rashad.
Oh.
And she's someone that I just adore. I adore. When I think about people that I want to emulate my career after, mm-hmm. she's at the top of that
yes.
list. Like women who are just intelligent, so talented, givers, mm-hmm. trailblazers, just on point in every way, beautiful inside out. Just her body of work to me is tremendous.
Yes. And she does a lot of directing now.
And she does a lot of directing.
So with one of your future shows that you write, you may need to bring her on as director.
I would love to sit down with Felicia.
Yeah. Well, if she's listening, come sit down with Leona yes. and Felicia be the director God. Of one of her future shows.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm going to get you everybody.
Thank
everybody
you. Thank
is going to come
Adam.
Work with you.
Thank you, Adam.
I love it. I love it. And what were some of your favorite foods growing up?
Favorite foods? To this day, it's the same. I love oxtail.
Oh.
You know, my family's Jamaican.
Yes.
And oxtail's one of those meat. They don't have a lot of bone, but mm-hmm. if you prepare it right, the Jamaican style that is, the meat is very tender, and you can suck on that bone for a long time. You got to get in between the little nuggets of the bone and then the marrow of the bone. Yeah, I love oxtail. I am not a good cook.
Okay, I was just about to ask.
I am not a good cook. I can do a simple recipe for friends in my crock pot at home, but it ain't gonna taste like mama's.
Okay.
And it will not be Jamaican style, but it will, I say it's soul food-ish style oxtail. I love oxtail. I also love, I love to eat ice cream after shows.
Mm. Oh, what
like,
flavors?
Oh my God, cookies and cream.
Yes.
Butter pecan, mm-hmm. maple walnut.
Mm.
I love something about after a show, that's my go-to.
Okay.
You know, I normally eat very light meal before a show. And then after the show, I'm not really starving.
Mm-hmm.
So my go-to is like a bowl of ice cream.
Mm.
And then after that bowl, because then it cools the cords down.
Oh, okay.
You know, like get a little hug.
Yes.
And then, dare I say it, and I swallow it down with a glass of red wine.
Oh, wow.
Don't judge me, people.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Any specific brand of ice cream that you like, or does it not really matter? You're just whatever.
No, you know, have you ever heard of Friendly's ice cream?
Yes.
So Friendly's is from Massachusetts. I'm from Massachusetts. They originated in Massachusetts. So I ate a lot of Friendly's.
Oh,
that
nice.
Creamery is just, it's one of the best,
yes.
you know?
Well, we had Friendly's. I mean, they had restaurants all over.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
It's
and
the best.
They were known, especially, I mean, too, for me too, growing up, they were like, everybody loved Friendly's ice cream.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Delicious.
I love hard ice cream, not soft ice cream. I like a hard ice cream.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. No, me too. Me too. And what kind of red wine do you drink with it?
My favorite brand of red wine is South African wine, Pinotage. Mm. I love just like it's kind of a heavy wine.
Okay.
So I have to be careful with it because you don't want to drink, it's not a day wine. That's something when you want to just like relax and go to bed, have a nice glass of Pinotage. But I like a red wine.
That's delicious.
Yeah, a red.
And where in Massachusetts did you grow up?
Springfield, Massachusetts.
Oh, nice.
Western Mass. Mm-hmm,
yes.
And we're known for the Basketball Hall of Fame is there. Dr. Seuss is from Springfield, Massachusetts. Wow. Yeah. Yeah.
I love that.
Ruth Carter, the costume designer who did Black Panthers, is from Springfield, Massachusetts. Yeah, we got some good stuff there.
Yes.
In Springfield.
Yeah, I lived in Boston for a few years, so okay. I'm familiar with different parts of Massachusetts.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, a little town.
Yeah, I love it. That's the whole game. So I thank you
that
for playing.
So much fun.
Yes, I love it. I love it. And now we're gonna go back to a few more questions. We are going to talk about your second writing project.
Yeah.
It's a musical about the life of Nelson Mandela.
Yes.
So what can you tell us about the show?
Okay.
We'll start with that.
All right, we'll start with that. First of all, I wanna just say that this is a dream come true.
Mm.
And unfortunately, I kind of got to hold my cards a little close when I talk about this show because it's still, all the parts and pieces are still coming together.
Okay.
Although it's coming together very aggressively and in an exciting way. When I was working on Nina Simone, I was in the middle of workshops and my very last workshop before I got picked up to go to George Street, I met two incredible people. Two brothers from South Africa, Greg and Sean Borowski, who wrote the music and the lyrics to Mandela. And they were looking to take on a book writer. And they fell in love with Little Girl Blue. And they thought we would be a good fit.
Wow.
So I've been working with them for like a year and a half of carefully crafting this story of Mandela, which is a lot of heavy lifting because of, as you can imagine, it's an important piece.
Yes.
It's an important piece of art. So we've just been immersing ourselves in all of the books and the research. And we've been very lucky to have the Mandela Foundation work alongside with us. And
that's wonderful.
His family. Yeah, come and see some of the workshops as we're developing this piece.
Oh, wow.
So it has a lot of support behind it. Huge responsibility across the board. Mm-hmm. And I would say maybe the biggest fear is like, would be the fact that, you know, we all want to get it right.
Mm-hmm.
But Mandela was a human being.
Yes.
And in my office, I have pictures of him right next to Nina, of course.
Good company.
And there's a picture of him and he sits there. When I wake up in the morning, I pour my cup of coffee and I sit down, I look at the script and Nelson is staring at me. And I could feel his energy telling me it is okay. You know, he wasn't born an icon.
Right.
He was made an icon.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a responsibility of telling his truth and telling it with honesty, you know.
Yes.
You don't have to get it all right.
Yes.
You know, his story deserves to be told and it needs to be reachable. People need to identify with him.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a living, breathing man that made plenty of mistakes, you know. And I think, you know, when you're writing pieces about icons, oftentimes, you know, you don't want to throw mud at them and get them dirty.
Right.
That's not my job to throw the mud, but it's also not my job to dodge it either.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my job is to just, you know, tell a story.
Yes.
And be as honest as I possibly can in writing these words for the actors to pass it on to them, to breathe life into it. And to protect the legacy.
Yeah.
You know, which is so, so very important. So this piece is by far, we're not trying to dust off history in any kind of way.
Mm-hmm.
And what we are doing is celebrating his life in a small period of his life. And, so that, you know, folks can see his show and be moved and take the badge of honor and continue the work that he works so hard for and place it in our laps to move it forward into the future. because you know we all have so much work to do.
Yes, that's wonderful. And what's it like to have his family there for some of the workshops, and what kind of feedback did they give, or what reactions did they have?
I tell you, you know, I just get chills when I think about it, because I never set out to, first of all, be a writer, and I never sought out. Mm-hmm. I never even saw myself walking into a room where I could say that I'm writing the Mandela musical.
Yes.
And I never set out to be shaking hands with his granddaughter and having conversation and breaking bread with Mandela's family. Mm. Never set out for that. But the universe designed that to happen.
Yeah.
And so what it's like, it's, oh God, I'm so grateful.
Yeah.
You know, I'm so grateful. And the work is hard.
Mm-hmm.
And I thank God for the work, the hard work. Mandela spent 27 years of his life in Robben Island, you know, incarcerated. And he made it to the other side. So I welcome the journey. I welcome the struggle. I welcome the fear that I fear, that I feel in my belly. You know, I welcome the joy that it brings me. And I welcome all the new relationships and the possibility of what this show is going to bring to this city and to the world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's so necessary.
Yes. Yes.
So it's gratifying an honor to work with them.
It feels like it's going to be a global
experience,
because literally everybody everywhere knows who he is.
That's right.
I mean, same thing with Nina Simone. Everybody knows who she is. So
yeah,
I mean, you're working on like two huge, so iconic pieces.
Yeah,
I could understand the excitement, the fear. I mean, every emotion that you feel, I could imagine.
Yes.
Yeah, it's terrific. What has been the most challenging part of creating the show so far, since it's not finished?
With Mandela, the biggest challenge would be the fact that, you know, with Nina, because I was the writer, performer, and all wearing all the hats, I pretty much got to like work with myself and then be like, here, director, let's work this out. And here, Mark, let's figure out the arrangements for this.
Yeah.
Now I'm going to do this with the music. You know, now I'm going to do this with the scene. This was more, this collaboration was quite different because, you know, the wheels were already running with them. You know, there was music and there was lyrics. There was a concept there, you know. So I was walking into a room that already had energy around it. And having to go into the room and then sit down with my collaborators, Greg and Sean, and find a space for the book to breathe and the trust, you know, because I have a very specific style of how I write and how to make that merge with the material that was already there with the lyrics and the music. But after a year, I mean, we've really found our way. But that was the biggest challenge, is like bringing our two styles together, because I'm American. They're from South Africa. It's such a learning space.
Yeah.
You know,
it's so nice to bring those cultures together too.
Gosh.
It's going to create something very special.
So much so. Yes, absolutely. Yes. It is exciting, you know, sometimes frustrating.
Yeah,
you
know,
but exciting. And at the end of the day, rewarding, rewarding. And I feel really grateful that I like have these two brothers, Greg and Sean Borowski, trust me. And I trust them very much as well.
Yeah.
And there's so much love around the project. That it's a gift.
That's great. Well, we can't wait to receive this gift.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Do you have a vision of like any anticipation of when you want it to land on Broadway?
Oh my goodness. I would love for it to be 2021, 2022. Everybody keeps telling us that we're on a fast track with this. And I think we're on the fast, and I do think we are on the fast track, because the message is now, you know?
Yes.
You know, especially with Broadway, shows come and go so quickly that you got to keep up with it.
Yes.
You know, and over are the days when folks, you know, wrote something and then they come back a month later, 2 and 3, 6 months later, and come circle back around it. No, this is a around the clock thing.
Yeah.
We've been working at this nonstop. You know, because creation is waiting.
Yes.
You know, we know we got work to do, and we got to get it there. So I see it 2021, 2022.
Great.
at the landing.
Well, we look forward to it. Yeah, so yeah, exciting.
Thank you.
So we're going to end the interview with these last two questions, and they're just going to be some general questions about you. First question is, what are some hobbies you have outside of performing?
Hobbies. I'd like to say that I'm a professional wine taster. Yes.
I love that.
I like to host them at my apartment. It's my little apartment. Oh. I like to bring my girlfriends over and be like, taste this and taste that. Now I don't think my palate is so savvy, but I call myself a professional wine taster.
Okay.
I enjoy it. I also love to paint. Mm. I love to do acrylic painting. It's very relaxing to me. And let me see, another hobby. I'm a new mom.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And I enjoy coloring with my son.
Oh, that's so nice.
He's an artist. And I enjoy that time that we have, because, you know, when they're in school, we have our mornings together and then we have our evenings together. Mm. My favorite part of the day is once we have dinner and we do an activity before he goes to bed, and he loves to color, and we just have so much fun just like talking and staying inside of the lines and exploring, and he teaches me so much.
Mm.
Yeah, it's been the biggest gift I've ever received in my life, the biggest challenge. Mm-hmm. And I'm really blessed to be a mother of a 5-year-old.
Yes.
Yeah.
Wow. That's wonderful.
Thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome. You're welcome. And now we're up to the last question.
Okay.
So I always end my interviews playing off of the title of my podcast, Bearing It All with Call Me Adam.
Okay.
So if you were to bear it all and reveal something about yourself that you have not told in a previous interview, what would you tell me today?
I would tell you that Leona Michelle hates auditions.
Mm.
I don't like to audition. I really don't. That's the part of the process that I am not attracted to,
mm-hmm.
is having to walk into a room and somehow prove myself, prove my worth. And I've worked really hard at like rethinking about it in a different way, mm-hmm. and finding some joy out of auditioning. I love performing.
Mm-hmm.
I love rehearsals. I love creating. I even love tech rehearsal. A lot of actors hate tech rehearsal, but uh-huh. I love tech rehearsals. Like when it all starts to come together.
Mm-hmm.
My favorite part of the process is the creative process.
Yeah.
In rehearsals, when you're exploring. Being on stage, love it. I love immersing but I do not like to audition, Adam. I don't like going into a room and saying, hi, my name is Leona Michelle, and going into the scene or the sides. And I get a lot of anxiety behind it.
Yeah.
And I don't think I ever do my best work.
Well, that's why you're going to continue to write shows and create your own parts, so you never have to audition again.
I have to audition.
Exactly. I am cast. It's my show.
Yes.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes. I love that. Well, this has been so much fun.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming on the show. And everybody listening to this podcast, you must come see Leona Michelle at George Street Theater on Thursday, March 19th,
yes!
for her one night only concert of it's all Nina Simone music. It's Broadway music.
Yeah.
It's going to be an incredible evening. And then stay tuned, because when Little Girl Blue comes to off Broadway first.
That's right. You can say Broadway too.
And Broadway. We're certainly going to have Leona back on the show.
Yes.
And as Mandela gets closer to premiering too, we'll have so much to talk about then.
We have so much to cover.
We do, yes. And for the concert on March 19th at George Street Playhouse, I'll have the ticket link up on callmeadam.com. So do your tickets. You're welcome.
So much.
You're welcome. Adam. No problem. Love talking to you.
Oh my gosh. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. And thanks for listening.
He'll get the dirt and the scoop and the story, for he happens to be in the know. Just ask anybody who's Adam. Adam lives for the business of show. CallMeAdam.com.
Thanks for listening. For more Call Me Adam interviews, visit CallMeAdam.com. And follow me on social media on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at CallMeAdamNYC.
Do you remember watching your favorite celebrity being interviewed, but you could tell there was more to that interview than what was being shown? My name is Adam Rothenberg, and in the past 16 years, I have interviewed over 2,200 artists and celebrities. And I am here to tell you that yes, there is definitely more to the interviews you have watched, read, or listened to. In my debut book, Behind the Curtain, The Mistakes, Lessons Learned, and Triumphs of Interviewing Celebrities, I take you behind the scenes of what really happens during an interview, sharing the joys, the pitfalls, and the OMG moments. You can get your copy on Amazon or through my entertainment platform, callmeadam.com. You can get your very own autographed copy.